Please join me in welcoming a preservation advocate and a true leader in our country, the 49th Secretary of the United States Department of Interior, the Honorable Dirk Kempthorne. Mr. Secretary.
John, thanks for a very nice introduction, and thanks for all that you're doing as well. Commissioner, you have a very successful program here. May I just see a show of hands? I'd like to know how many are from Tennessee and from North Carolina. So how many are from Tennessee? Okay, and how many from North Carolina? Excellent. Nice to meet both of your states. Mr. Mayor, it's nice to be in Knoxville. As I was speaking to the mayor, I learned of a family heritage with the Pilot Travel Centers. And I said, you know what? I met your mother and father at the White House. And I got to say hello to Jim just a moment ago again. At the White House, in a very beautiful setting, I said, I don't know if this is appropriate, but the Pilot Travel Centers have the best bathrooms. And they truly do. That's part of tourism. So, President Peterson, very nice to meet you from the University of Tennessee, and what an outstanding institution and very dynamic in all that you do here. Dale Dittmanson, thanks for all you do as the superintendent of the Great Smoky Mountains National Park. Dale and all of the professionals of the National Park Service are doing great things for us. Paul Anderson, who's seated next to him, is our acting regional director. Paul, we thank you for that effort as well. And all the men with the National Parks. Lamar Alexander was here. He had to catch a flight at 1 o'clock. And having been a U.S. Senator and a governor, I have served with your delegations. And so Phil Bredesen, who's a friend of mine, and Mike Easley, again, we've served together. When I testified 2 weeks ago before the Senate Appropriations Committee, 17 members on the committee, of the 17 members, I had served with 15 of them in the Senate, the other two had been governors with, so it wasn't bad. I'll tell you how Washington, D.C. can work. When I was a new rookie senator in the United States Senate, I had the honor of serving on the Armed Services Committee. And being a rookie, I was under the impression you were supposed to go to your hearings. So I attended one of these meetings, and ironically that day, most of the Democrats were there. I was the only Republican. And you're seated by seniority, so I wasn't even noticed. One of America's icons was speaking, Senator John Glenn from Ohio. All right, in Ohio. And as I listened to John Glenn speak, I thought, he makes a great deal of sense on this particular issue. What I didn't know is he had brought the same issue up for the last 3 years in a row, never had the support of his colleagues, and it always failed. So he's wrapping up his arguments, and he then made a motion for adoption. And there was no second. So it was going to die for lack of a second. Well, at that point, I said, second the motion. Then a staffer behind me leaned forward and said, sir, do you realize that you have all the proxy votes of the Republican senators? And I said, you're kidding. Said, oh, no, sir. So they go to call the roll, and they know it won't take long because there's not many Republicans here, but they start. Sam Nunn was the chairman. You know, Senator Nunn? No. Senator Levin? No. Senator Byrd? No. Senator Kennedy? No. Senator Glenn? Aye. And they just kept rolling. Senator Lieberman? And then they got to the Republican. Senator Thurmond? Aye by proxy. Senator Warner? Aye by proxy. Senator McCain, aye by proxy. I became more and more bold at voting. Finally, they called my name, and I said, aye. And they tallied it, and he won. And Chairman Dunn immediately adjourned the hearing. So we went out the different doorways to the hall, and I turned to head back to my office. Standing up in the hallway waiting for me was John Glenn. And as I approached, he said, "Who are you?" I said, "Apparently I'm your new best friend." And we became very dear friends. In fact, I passed legislation following local government, you know, about unfunded federal mandates. So the only Reform Act passed on that was mine and my partner's, John Glenn. That's how DC can work. So now I have my second tour of duty here in Washington, D.C. Secretary of Interior. And as Ronald Reagan said, only in Washington, D.C. would the department in charge of the outdoors be called Interior. That's what we are. We are the administrative authority for all of the U.S. territories. So from American Virgin Islands to Guam to American Samoa, we have all of the compact states, such as Micronesia, Marshall Islands, Palau. So most of the Pacific, as you look at the islands, we have the administrative authority, and we're their department. We are the trustee for all Native American tribes. We are the landlord of 20% of the United States of America. We have our jurisdiction that goes 200 miles off of the East Coast, the West Coast, the Gulf of Mexico, all the way to the Arctic. We have the U.S. Geological Survey. We have 40% of the U.S.-Mexico border as our jurisdiction. Third largest law enforcement entity in the federal government. Department of Justice, Department of Homeland Security, Department of Interior. And we have all the national parks. 391 of America's treasures. That's really very, very special. I'm delighted to be here with you today. This has been pointed out, this is my second time to move back. The Great Smoky Mountains National Park is our most visited national park. And you can be very proud of that. Attracting more than 9 million people a year. It also generates more economic activity for local communities than any other park. $672 million. It's an awesome number. The communities and people of this region are inherently linked to the park and vice versa. I can think of no better place to hold a summit on sustainable tourism. So you have an outstanding idea, and you know that, and that's why you're here as well. As you may remember, a little over a year ago, I announced the initial funding request to Congress for the President's Centennial Initiative to reinvigorate and to enhance our park system in time for the 100th anniversary of the national parks in 2016. Park Service Director Mary Wormar and I began a national tour of listening sessions. All over America, in essence, it was town hall meetings. We wanted to know what the American people wanted their children and their grandchildren to experience when they visited our parks. What role did they think the parks should play in the lives of Americans and visitors from around the world? What were the signature projects they thought should be highlighted under the initiative? And I'll tell you that it's no coincidence that the very first listening session we had was in Gatlinburg. Standing room only. Wonderful, wonderful people. Great hospitality and great enthusiasm, and everybody spoke. Even youngsters. It was really very memorable. We had, an overflow crowd that day. I had an opportunity to meet with the board of directors of the Friends of Smoky Mountain Park and Smoky Mountains Association. I toured the wall that expresses dignified gratitude for the contribution of so many organizations and people to the park. And I believe that Jim and Terry leaders of those organizations are here today. I also bought some sourwood honey as a gift at the gift shop. I like honey, but I'm not a great fan of honey. I have to tell you, that's the finest honey I've ever had. I actually will eat it now just with a spoonful. And somebody graciously gave me another jar of it on this visit, so thank you very much. Before Bob shared the challenges of getting people to bridge differences and work together can be easily overcome if you'll have these types of settings. As Dale told me, that often the most productive meetings they have are when you have the large groups, so that you can go ahead and define your terms. We get set in our ways, we get set in our rhetoric. I'll give you an idea. When I was a member of the U.S. Senate, we had meeting after meeting on wilderness, whether or not there should be an area designated as wilderness. And there was a person who spoke, a citizen, and he was adamant that we had to have wilderness. And I said, what is it that you want to achieve? What is important to you? And he said, well, I'm an outfitter and guide. And when I bring people from the East Coast out here on the pack horses, when we come over the one ridge, I just don't want to see construction on the other ridge. It'll diminish the experience. And I said, so, if we ensure there's no construction or development on that ridge, are you okay? He said, I'm fine. I said, do you need wilderness designation? He said, I don't care what you designate. So a lot of times if we'll simply define the terms, I would suggest that all of you in this room have more things in common than you have outside the bounds. And you can accomplish those great things. To build partnerships inside and outside the local community, and you're already doing that. The friends organizations that you have, the partnership you have with the National Park Service, with the university, with local government, it's quite dynamic. I appreciate so much what you're doing at this summit. That's why I look to you for advice on managing our parks and other public lands. I've learned firsthand that the federal government can be a vital partner in providing opportunities and developing parks and providing healthy outdoor recreation to citizens. We set out to preserve a scenic area in the foothills outside the city of Boise called Hull's Gulch. The area had great potential for recreation, but much of it was privately owned and at risk of being developed. The federal government proved to be the catalyst that made it possible for us to transform the area into a park for the people of Boise. With the help of federal funds, we brought together a partnership of conservation and recreation groups and purchased the lands from willing sellers. As a result, Hull's Gulch is now a 213-acre reserve with countless hiking and biking trails, next to a dynamic city. If you're a child in Boise, chances are that you've hiked or ridden your bike in Hull's Gulch. Now I'm on the other side of the fence. And it's interesting because I voluntarily left the United States Senate to go home and to run for governor. And then I received the honor of serving in this job. And when I hold meetings around the country, it's funny because sometimes we're not talking about national parks. Sometimes we're talking about things that are a little more controversial. And witnesses will get up and they'll point fingers and say, you feds, you know, we've had a belly full of you. And I just kind of smile. And they say, why are you smiling? I said, because for the last few months I've been a fed. I went home because I believe in states' rights. I believe in the 10th Amendment. But I also believe in government serving its citizens, serving and doing right by them. Our parks truly are a priceless inheritance, bequeathed to us by our parents and grandparents. I firmly believe that this is an inheritance that we cannot simply pass down to the next generation as we received it. Rather, we must seek to improve our parks, to make them even more inspiring and memorable places to visit. We must help local communities welcome the millions of people who who flock to the parks with attractive, appropriate, environmentally sound development. We've been beneficiaries of the foresight of those who came before us. We must be the benefactors to those who come after us. Fortunately, we have a lot of help in high places. President Bush and Laura Bush are great supporters of both our national park system and cultural and ecotourism, as John has pointed out. In fact, they often mention that they live in a national park, the White House. Last year, the theme of the White House Christmas celebration was holidays in the national parks. More than 340 park superintendents from all over the country sent in ornaments for the White House Christmas tree. They are instant heirlooms. They're absolutely magnificent. Each depicting a scene from the park. Many of these ball-shaped ornaments were designed by local artists. Great Smoky Mountains National Park sent a beautiful one designed by local artist Joey Heath, who works for the Great Smoky Mountains Association. Her decoration features a bear having a Christmas feast on berries with the mountains in the background. You can see it on the White House website. The national parks were also the subject of the annual White House Christmas video starring Barney and Miss Beasley, the Bush's Scottish Terriers. The two dogs set out to become Junior Rangers. I'm pleased to say that both Mary Bomar and I had cameo roles in this award-winning documentary. As did former Prime Minister Tony Blair. Mary and Tony can quit their day jobs. I'm told not to. Thanks to the strong support of the President and key members of Congress for moving forward with the Centennial Initiative. Last week, I announced the initial round of grants for the initiative on the steps of the Capitol with key members of Congress. In all, we announced 110 grants for 76 parks, totaling over $50 million. The idea is very simple and straightforward. For each year leading up to 2016, that in the operations portion, that we have $100 million that helps us. As Dale can tell you, the current operating budget that we now have for OAIT is the largest single appropriation increase ever in the history of the National Park Service. For example, we will add 3,000 seasonal park rangers throughout our parks, 55 of whom will be right here, and that stops a 10-year decline. There's also 1,500 permanent folks that we'll be adding. Now, in addition to that, on the operations side, we have the Centennial Match. And the idea there is that each year, leading up to 2016, we will have $100 million available from the federal government to match the private sector. When that legislation was introduced last year by people who believe in it and agree with it, they said, we do believe, however, we'll be lucky if we get offers of $20 million from the private sector. I will tell you that we now have received, in the first year, 321 signed letters of financial commitment for over $300 million. And once we announced that, we have now had others who have called and said, we want to be part of this. May 10th, roughly, we're going to have a markup in the House of Representatives. Get this moving. We already had the first down payment. But I will tell you that what you're going to see in over the course of the next few years, leading up to 2016, and the graduating class of 2016 are the fourth graders today. You're going to see an infusion of $3 billion into the National Park Service. What a way to celebrate the centennial. On-the-ground projects and programs that are in place. I'll give you an idea, because of the 110 of the grants, three of them are right here. The first is a $200,000 grant, Preserve, Stabilize, Provide Interpretation for the Elkmont Historic District, which, as you know, is a group of historic cabins in the Tennessee part of the park. The cabins date back to the 1910s and 1920s, but were occupied up until 1992. We're working with the state of Tennessee and the Advisory Council for Historic Preservation on this project, and the Friends of the Smokies and the Great Smoky Mountains Association will each contribute $50,000 to match. So this project is now green light. The second is a $100,000 grant for a new visitor center at the Cherokee, North Carolina entrance to the park. This is a true partnership project. The Great Smoky Mountain Association is spending $2.5 million to construct the center. Friends of the Smokies will contribute $500,000 for the exhibits. The federal grant will cover the cost of planning and the designing the exhibits. It's an extraordinary example of partnership, of the power of partnership, and I applaud these two groups for what they're doing. The third is a $40,000 grant for our downloadable park. It's a project to better serve today's technology-savvy young people and families by providing podcasts and other online resources within the park. The funding will pay for the equipment and software to let us bring podcast production in-house. The Great Smoky Mountains Association has committed $20,000 towards this project. The Centennial Challenge is underway. There's a lot of work that's left to do. Let's say we've received tremendous signed financial commitments from people. In addition to the Centennial Challenge, President Bush and Laura Bush also have supporters and been supporters of helping communities attract visitors by preserving their history and culture. This is what John's been talking about. In 2003, the President signed an executive order establishing the Preserve America program to empower communities to celebrate and share with visitors the culture and the history of these United States. And we're lucky to have people like John now playing such a key leadership role in that. Let me tell you something else that we need to be very cognizant of. And that is that when we talk about these volunteers, what they mean to us. We have six volunteers that have contributed the 3,000 hours required for the Take Pride in America Secretarial Award. Three of them are here with us today, and I'd like to acknowledge them. Sid Davis, where is Sid? Sid, would you stand up? He's been a volunteer for the park since 1994, has worked tirelessly to promote biking in the park, and assist backpackers. He's also a local historian who shares his knowledge of the area with visitors. Sid, thank you. Very well. Claudia Conker. Where's Claudia? There is Claudia. Volunteer ethnographer who has spent thousands of hours interviewing residents of the Cosby and Sugarland areas to tell the story of those who lived in and around the park before and during its founding. Claudia, thank you very much. Dan Lawson. Dan Lawson's been a volunteer since 1990, helping backpackers arrange their trips, learn about the park, and protect park resources. He also served as chairman of the board of the Great Smoky Mountains Association. Dan, thank you very much. I will close now with this final thought. Something that's critically important. the vital importance of reaching out to today's youth. Many young people have become separated from the power of the great outdoors to renew and to revive the human spirit. Vast numbers of children spend much of their lives in windowless rooms playing games online, games in which the hunted are often human. You and I are in the business of changing this. We're in the business of renewing the connection between people and the outdoors, of getting people out of cyberspace and into open space, of getting them to put down their BlackBerries and go pick BlackBerries, to stop channel surfing and go windsurfing, to shut off the webcast and cast a line for a trout. Young people have become disconnected with nature. We are all here because we have a passion for the outdoors. Do you know that the Surgeon General has suggested that a baby born today may have less life expectancy than us? It is the first time in civilized society that that has been suggested. And we must never allow it to happen. Center for Disease Control has said that there's an absolute trend that is on an upswing of chronic illness. Type 2 diabetes, which is onset adult diabetes, is now occurring routinely in 6-year-old children. Youngsters are being diagnosed with high blood pressure. The trend line is, it's awful. We have to do something about this. Because the children become sedentary. That's why the idea of the downloadable park is powerful in what we may be able to do. But we have to get the children reconnected. Think of what happens, ladies and gentlemen, if through the wonderful summits that you have here, working together, doing great things for the parks, for the outdoors, for the preservation, and the next generation yawns. They're not ready to receive their inheritance. They don't see the value of it. We are the stewards today. It is incumbent upon us to make those improvements to the environment, to our lands and our waters, our air. But ladies and gentlemen, do not leave the children behind. If we do, we are unsuccessful. I will also tell you that on trend lines, entry-level biking, hiking, fishing are in the decline. I speak to the Outdoor Recreation Association, and they know the numbers. We must reconnect the children. Many of you know of Richard Bluth and his book, Last Child in the Woods. You may be part of the effort. These junior ranger programs are awesome. Laura Bush is one of the richest champions for the junior ranger program. On Saturday, I was with a group of children at the National Mall. They were second graders. They all got a teddy bear. And I asked them, I said, do y'all know a class song or a song that you sing? And one little girl says, yes, we sing the Star Spangled Banner. I said, would you sing it for us? And she said, of course. I mean, this is all impromptu, but I handed her the microphone. And this little second-year-old named Lucia sang with beautiful clarity of note, and all of her classmates singing with her the Star Spangled Banner. Pretty awesome. A few months before that, I'd gone out to the reflecting pond because we'd stocked with bluegill and smallmouth bass, and we brought kids from the inner city. And with wonderful partners like Bass Pro Shop, we put a rod and reel in their hands, and these children were able to catch a fish. First time they've been fishing. And I asked this one little girl who was 10, I said, what do you want to be when you grow up? And she said, I want to be a doctor. I said, yeah, that's wonderful. Well, what kind of a doctor? She said, I want to be a children's doctor. I said, how do you know about children's doctors? She said, because I have to see one all the time. I said, do you have diabetes? She said, yes, I do. I said, do you have to inject yourself with a hypodermic needle? She said, no. I said, how often? She said, every day. If you could see the smile on that little girl's face when she caught the fish, I think we have a little hero that every day gets up and uses a hypodermic needle to inject herself with the insulin. And she wants to become a children's doctor. If we can continue to raise her self-esteem and the self-esteem of other children by experiencing the outdoors and all that we love, and to now share that with the next generation, then we will have accomplished our task. We will have been the stewards that we were to have been. So I'm proud to serve with you, to join you in seeing so many positive things happen. There is no limit to what can occur. So allow your imagination, your creativity, your energy, and your resources to flow together to create the combination that allows us to truly be America the Beautiful. God bless you all.
Present you with a token of our appreciation and hopefully a reminder of this wonderful day and of our beautiful Smoky Mountains. Thank you for the grant.
Thank you.
Thank you.